Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Well, folks, once again, we've got an action-packed show for you today. We're going to catch you up on latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. We got a lot of motorsports to talk about. Last weekend, Formula One in Monaco. This week, Spanish Grand Prix, which just got over moments ago. I was listening to that race. IndyCar and Gateway last week. It's the 24 Hours of Le Mans, which is racing right now. Last weekend, Michigan for NASCAR. This weekend, Pocono. Cool couple articles about AMC. That's not a brand we talk about much anymore. Of course, we'll be talking about what's going on with gas prices. They're sneaking down a little bit, and I'm pretty excited about that. And of course, it wouldn't be The Car Show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on The Car Show. Well, today we're going to start out with an article out of Hemmings, one of my favorite magazines that I get every month. And the title of this article is 1968 AMC, When the Smoke Clears, This Kenosha Killer Comes Out on Top. Well, it was a shootout that took place in the muscle car world. A 1968 AMX beat all comers. Yes, beat all comers, including the invincible Cobra Jet Mustangs. In a David versus Goliath showdown published in March of 1986 in the issue of Car Review, later retitled Muscle Car Review, the AMX not only took out the Mustang, but it took out a 1968 Ram Air GTO and a 1969 Dodge Daytona. All competitors had more cubic inches, more horsepower, and more foot-pounds of torque. But the Kenosha Killer was the featherweight of the group. It weighed in nearly 650 pounds less than the GTO, nearly 750 pounds less than the winged Daytona, and the Mustang, it was still 250 pounds heavier than the AMC AMX. Well, perhaps no one was more surprised with the shootout's results than AMX's owner and driver John Becker, who still owns the car almost four decades later. When I heard the Cobra Jet was coming to the shootout, I figured, well, that's it. It's going to crush all the other cars. But there were some issues, and it just didn't perform like everyone expected. Even still, I was surprised to get past the GTO and the Daytona. Now, indeed, the AMX raised eyebrows every time it came down the drag strip in the now defunct Green Valley Raceway. It was the only car to post a top below 13 seconds ET, or lapse time. In its first race, it gapped the Daytona by nearly a second, and walked away from the GTO in the next round, crossing the beams approximately 1.3 seconds ahead of the portly Pontiac. In the final round, yep, it was a 1 second spread over the mighty Cobra Jet Mustang. Now, full disclosure, the AMX was likely making a little bit more horsepower than the factory-rated horsepower, thanks to a slight mild camshaft and headers that had been installed by the dealer. But the Mustang was not quite factory-delivered as well. The medium riser intake, the dual point distributor, were putting upgrades, also putting more rubber to the ground, wider than stock tires. Both cars were slightly tweaked, but the Mustang was still the odds-on favorite. Unfortunately, the 428 Cobra Jet engine was a bit sickly on the day of the race. The car's best run was only a 14.99. Far expected the performances in the mid-13s. Nevertheless, a win is a win. Well, the clutch was going away by the final round, John said, so I had to feather it off the line for the third race. But the car still ran great. I even drove it home after the race. Surprisingly, he had owned the car for a few months, and I had very little experience at the drag strip, where he wheeled it around the other muscle cars with great consistency, running a 13.95, a 13.96, and then a final clutch slipping 14.13 elapsed time. John had found the car in the classifieds in the old car publication. It was in Ohio, more than 1,000 miles away from his home in Dallas, Texas. The seller had to send a few printed photos of the car in the mail. That was enough for John and his wife to jump in their truck and head to the Buckeye State with the tow bar on the rear bumper and bring this baby home. The deal was struck, and they returned home with the AMX. Well, I grew up in an AMC household, John said. My dad always had Nashes and Ramblers, and I remember when I was 9 visiting the local dealership to see my first of the two AMX they received. So I drove a rusty AMX through college later on, but I always wanted a better one, and I've been looking for this car when the one in Ohio popped up. Now, there were only 2,112 390 horsepower four-speed cars ever produced for the year, and they loaded that car with the Go package, the Rally Pack, as well as the other dealer installed options, which was a camshaft and headers. There were only about 18,000 miles on the odometer. Now, John knew the car had been repainted after an early years crash and had a little damage on the left side, apparently repaired with genuine AMC parts. While John could tell there had been some damage occurred, the car was straight and the unitized chassis was undamaged. It was a good repair for the late 60s, early 70s, he said. I also had all the AMC parts and the colors were correct. Laurel green was the color. It was a pretty nice shape and we were excited to pick up this car in Ohio. Now, interesting enough, as old as this car was, it still had the original belts, hoses, and plug wires, and the original mufflers. Now, despite the repairs, it was a very original car. It really didn't have to do a lot. Now, for the record, the Go package was AMC's heavy-duty equipment package, like the Mopar Track Pack or the Ford Drag Pack. It also included special handling components, power-assisted front disc brakes, twin grip, limited slips differential, heavy-duty cooling, dual exhaust, a space saver tire, a pair of black stripes down the center of the body. As the Rally package, it was a twin gauge setup housed in the spaces that are retained for the dashboard's central air vents. And in this story, to be familiar with many, John said he enjoyed the car for a few years, including competing in the Landmark Shootout before a minivan muscled the AMC out of rotation for the garage. That's a sad story, isn't it? Well, I traveled a lot for work and we had four children, and guess what? Four kids don't fit in a two-seat AMX. So for about the next 30 years, the AMX sat undriven, but not forgotten. The racing bug never went away. Either did when John's lifestyle settled down enough that he could afford and had the time for the car. He set his sights on reviving it and competing in the pure stock muscle car category, the Michigan-based shootout hosted by brothers Dan and Dennis Jensen and Lyndon Hughes. They do such a great job with this. It's a great event for the hobby. Well, he made the race in 2018, but the car didn't quite match its 1986 car review shootout. John turned to Ross Gregory at Marquette Classics in Michigan to help sort the car out. Along with some friends in the AMC community, he really got her in shape, John said. After many years off the road, she needed a thorough go-through. With the assistance including tuning the car, the parameters of the shootout, John returned to the pure stock drags next year and got it back into the 13-second runs. In fact, the car had a quick run of 13.4. Thanks to a slight bump in compression and a less restrictive exhaust system, getting the AMC back on the road and on the track was a full circle moment for John, who owned about 20 cars over the years and still has four in his garage today. However, this story is always the one he'll tell. Day more than 40 years ago, when the underdog AMC ran away from the more powerful Goat, the Wing Wonder, and the Cobra Jet, was down on its venom, documented for all the world to see and for all the world to discuss some four decades later. That's how legends are born. Yeah, big fan of the AMX. For those who are not familiar with this car, this is the Javelin, which they then shortened and took out the back seat. And this was AMC's big last gasp. And it was a fabulous car. And I still remember the commercials on the television with the phrase, "Hey, Javelin." And I still remember a commercial on television where a guy drops off his Javelin with the young man at the parking garage. He walks away, and all you see is smoke rolling out of the garage as the young man decides that maybe he wants to exercise the legs on this AMC Javelin before he puts it in a parking spot. So, AMC, back on the board. Well, to continue on the thread of AMC, this is from the website called Slash Gear, and the headline reads, "AMC's downfall can be traced back to one tragic moment." And the picture on this is an AMC Javelin that shows a nice orange one with the AMC license plate on the front. Well, AMC was founded in 1954 in an attempt to compete with the big three, giving us iconic brands such as Rambler, Javelin, Hornet, Pacer, and a few underrated muscle cars. Also, AMC had brands like Jeep and Rambler as well, but the company experienced financial troubles by the 70s. And in the mid-70s, AMC had lost the equivalent of $300 million as sales rapidly declined. Renault purchased AMC in 1980, coming to its rescue. In the end, AMC would not make it to the 90s. Many say it was due to Renault's chairman then, George Bessie, getting assassinated in 1986, leading up to the tragic night. Bessie had been heavily criticized for his aggressive layoffs to over 21,000 workers across France, aimed at making Renault profitable again as he became the head of the struggling company. 3 months after his death, it was revealed that a French militia anarchist group, Actions Directes, was responsible for the assassination in a retaliation for the layoffs. With the death of Bessie, AMC lost its biggest supporter due to AMC's struggles at the time. Many questioned Bessie's decision to heavily invest in the American automaker. As Raymond Levy took over Renault, swiftly acted on selling AMC to Chrysler in 1987. Now, despite AMC's demise in the 80s, the Jeep brand continues on to this day. In the 70s, when AMC was losing money in sales, Jeep basically kept the brand alive. The only reason AMC had a small profit in 1978 was thanks to Jeep. And that's what Bessie took interest in AMC and brought Renault into the struggling company. He believed that Jeep could become a successful brand in North America, and he made it a major focus of AMC, which is also why I heavily invested in developing the Cherokee XJ around that time. Now again, the Cherokee is prepared for its long return. When Chrysler purchased AMC, it pivoted to become Jeep and the Eagle division. Eagle was gone by the 90s, but Jeep powered on just as Bessie had predicted. Fiat acquired a stake in Chrysler and then formed the Fiat Chrysler Automobiles in 2014, bringing Jeep along. FCA merged with then at that time the French PSA group to form Stellantis in 2021, with Jeep remaining one of the 14 car brands under this company. It's interesting, you also think of another car which we owned as a family, which was the Gremlin, and that was one of the AMC cars as well. So the only car that lives, the only brand that lives out of the AMC family is Jeep, and Jeep is going along just swimmingly, a very popular brand here in Arizona. Well, from the BBC's website called Top Gear, here are 9 cars that were sold at losses. Technologically advanced? Yes. Financially not well? Big fat check. Well, the number one is the Mini. It may have been a popular, clever design and popular with the public, but even after 14 years of production, British Leyland admitted in 1973 that it was losing money on each Mini. Still, it got new customers into the brand, and I guess at that time they actually broke even when spare parts were taken into account. Number two, well, this is the Smart Car. Another car that was expensive to develop and then struggled to sell in its first two generations. Yes, the design was clever, but by 2013, reported financial analysts said they had estimated that they had lost $2.8 billion on this project. Ouch. Number three, the Porsche 959, an iconic car, another ridiculously complex, groundbreaking supercar that flopped financially. It had magnesium wheels, electronically adjusted suspension, sequential turbos, adjustable all-wheel drive, but Porsche lost nearly $100,000 on each car it sold. Number four, the Jaguar X-Type. How quite when Jaguar was took over by Ford, it turned an unprofitable mess even worse. Ford bosses originally shifted and thought they would sell 100 of these X-Type cars a year. Jag shifted. They sold just 350,000 after eight years and lost $1.5 billion on the project. The VW Phaeton. Well, this was another masterpiece developed with a $1.2 billion developmental budget. Reports say the Volkswagen lost around $25,000 on every single car they sold. Number six, the A2 Audi. Lightweight, super slippery, clever design, but a bit of a sales flop. Only 176,000 were built in a 5-year production run. Audi suggests that they lost somewhere around $5,000 per car. Number seven, Mercedes, when it revived the Maybach brand, taking on the Rolls-Royce Phaeton. apparently overinvested almost $1 billion in the project. They ended up losing nearly $250,000 per car. The Bugatti Veyron, with huge R&D costs, bonker target numbers, as well as delays, the magnum opus for the Bugatti team, actually, it lost many, many billions of dollars, but right now it looks like a success with the fact that these cars are selling well, way over what they were, what they cost to produce. The number nine, the Lexus LFA. Gosh, I remember when this car came out, how much hurt Lexus when they sold, were selling these cars for $1 million, even though the price tag was $350,000 back in 2010. So they lost money when they originally sold them, but the people who did buy them are able to resell them at a much higher price. So those are some of the cars that are really cool, but didn't make a lot of money for the people who developed them. Well, last weekend we had the Grand Prix race in Monaco. Normally we used to run the same weekend as the Indy 500, but they moved it back a week. And last weekend, well, he continued his role. Kimi Antonelli wins the race with Lewis Hamilton finishing in second. At this time, Isaac Hadjar was in third, Oscar Piastri in fourth, Liam Lawson finished in fifth, Everett Lindblad in sixth, Pierre Gasly in seventh, Alex Albon in eighth, Esteban Ocon in ninth, and Sergio Perez rounding out the top 10. The reason was the rundown of the finishers was the fact that there was a penalty applied to Pierre Gasly. This weekend, Pierre and his team appealed the penalty, and they were awarded with their third place finish. So Pierre Gasly actually did get on the podium. So Kimi Antonelli wins last weekend with Lewis Hamilton in second and Pierre Gasly finishing in third. Now let's talk about today's race from Spain. Well, quite a race this morning from Spain. I listened to it on the radio, and I am proud to announce after 686 days, Lewis Hamilton has won another Grand Prix. His first for Ferrari, his first win since 2024 at Spa, Belgium, and his 106th win and first as a driver for Ferrari. Lewis Hamilton finishes in first pole sitter. George Russell finishes in second driving for Mercedes-Benz. And Lando Norris finishes in third. So all three drivers in this Grand Prix are all from Britain. So congratulations to Lewis Hamilton getting another win of his first for Ferrari and his first win in 686 days and his 106th Grand Prix win of his career. Weekend IndyCars were in St. Louis, and the headline reads, Newgarden holds off Ericsson for a wonderful victory at the Worldwide Technology Raceway. Well, it took more than 3 hours to complete after two red flags for rain, a costly roll of the dice by pole sitter Alex Palou, and a ton of laps led by Marcus Ericsson. Joseph Newgarden made another statement win as IndyCar's best oval racer rocked Worldwide Technology Center with a huge win for the number two Team Penske Chevy driver. It was the two-time champion's sixth win at Gateway, and it was his first trip to victory lane this year. Didn't come easy. It was a classic Newgarden performance as he passed Ericsson in the number 28 Andretti Honda Global, the Global Honda. Ericsson led 114 laps of the 260, but had no answer as Newgarden reeled him in as he crossed the finish line, 6/10 behind the Penske driver. So Joseph Newgarden back on the winner's podium, a big win for him, and a big win for Chevy as well after getting their you-know-whats handed to them the week before, 2 weeks before when they were in Detroit. So Newgarden wins, Marcus Ericsson finished second. Christian Rasmussen, who just re-signed his deal with Ed Carpenter Racing, finishes in third, Renix VK in fourth, and rounding out the top five was Scott McLaughlin. So we had two of the Penske cars in the top five, and all three of the cars in the top 10 as David Malukas finished in seventh. Weekend NASCAR was in Michigan, and the headline reads, Hamlin ties and honors Busch at Michigan. Well, Denny Hamlin celebrated his 63rd win of his NASCAR career and honored the driver whose mark he tied. It also appeared to be his former teammate. Hamlin and Kyle Busch are now tied 8th on the all-time wins list in the Cup Series. Joe Gibbs Racing had a flag ready for Hamlin in the post-race celebration as he came down the front stretch. It was number 18. It had Busch's signature on it. It was the number that he drove for 15 years while at Gibbs through 2008 through 22. The black flag also had the number 1 in black and white outlined in Joe Gibbs Racing style. The number 8 was in white with red outline stylized by Richard Childress Racing, where Busch raced the number 8 car since 2023. Denny Hamlin said, "The offseason was pretty rough for me. You know, the NASCAR family, we lost a lot of people. This week we lost Ned Jarrett, the original badass of the number 11. We're still thinking of Kyle, Samantha, Brexton, and Lennox. It's unbelievable me strapping this car every week. I do not take this for granted." So Denny Hamlin just will not stop winning races. It is just incredible. And he goes on to tie Kyle Busch for 63 wins. And let's talk about what's going on this weekend in the Pocono Mountains for NASCAR. NASCAR is running what's called the Tricky Triangle, which is in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania. That race is on today, and I believe that race has been moved up, so it might actually be on right now. They're expecting maybe some weather in that area. That race is on Amazon Prime, and Denny Hamlin would be starting from the pole. Yeah, Denny Hamlin, who's won the last two races and is making a charge to try to take over the lead for NASCAR Cup Series this year. Kyle Larson will start in second. Daniel Suarez is going to start in third. Ty Gibbs in fourth. And Chase Briscoe will round out your top five as your starters. And I'll have those results for you next weekend. Other couple little bits of news from NASCAR. Last weekend, a horrible crash that Christopher Bell was involved with. And the good news is he has been cleared to race this weekend, and he also credits the advancements in safety for not allowing him to get hurt any more than he did in that crash. Also, too, was announced last weekend that Josh Berry will not be returning to the Wood Brothers Racing Team next year. Hopefully Josh will land on his feet somewhere, and that means there's a slot open over at the Wood Brothers Racing, and Wood Brothers has a technical alliance with the folks at Penske. So we'll see what happens with that race seat for next year. Upcoming schedule next weekend, they're actually going to be running, and this is NASCAR, going to be running at the Naval Base Coronado to help celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States, the Ariel 250, and that is going to be next weekend, and that is going to be on Prime. That'll be their last race for Prime this year, and that will be very exciting. Expect to see a lot of exciting and interesting racing of them running on the naval base, actually out on many of the runways they use at the base. So that ought to be really cool to watch. All right, let's talk gas prices with our friends over at AAA. Right now, the average gas price is $4.07 across the United States. Right now here in Arizona, our average gas price is $4.43 a gallon. Our neighbors in New Mexico, $3.91. Colorado, $4.10, Utah, $4.29, Nevada, $4.92, California, $5.74 a gallon. Wow. All right, as we head east, Texas, $3.52, Oklahoma, $3.56, Arkansas, $3.69, Missouri, $3.75, Florida, $3.83, Ohio, $4 a gallon, and as we head up into Pennsylvania, $4.22 a gallon. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices locally here in Arizona. Yeah, we're finding some gas prices again under $4, which feels really good. The Maverick station in Littlefield, Arizona, $3.60 a gallon. The Costco in Tucson on Tucson Marketplace, $3.69. How about this? The Sam's Club in Tempe, $3.70, as well as the one in Gilbert. The Costco in Gilbert at $3.75. The Shell station in Tucson on Speedway, $3.79. Sam's Club, $3.79 in Tucson. And, at $3.89 for the Arco station in Tucson. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in Metro Phoenix. We already mentioned the Sam's Club and Costco gas prices, which are just spectacular. How about that? $3.70. Let's see. Sam's Club in Gilbert, $3.89. Costco in Gilbert, $3.89. Walmart on Baseline at $3.93. The Quick Trip on Mesa Drive is at $3.95. And I know that I was blessed. I got gas at $3.99 at the Costco at what used to be Paradise Valley Mall. So here we go, folks. We got some gas prices under $4. Finally, I feel like we're moving in the right direction. Fingers crossed. Well, it's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, you often recommend synthetic motor oil for cars. How do they make a synthetic oil? Most modern products are made from oil, plastics, etc. How do they make synthetic oil? And that's from John. Well, John, that's a good question. In referring to oil, synthetic means the process is not a naturally occurring one, but a synthetic oil begins with petroleum. And there are two ways to make a synthetic oil. One from the ground up method involving with crude oil or natural gas and cracking it to remove a small molecule called ethylene. These make smaller ethylene molecules. They fuse them together to build larger and larger molecules and eventually put something that is called a PAO, and that is stands for a polyalpha olefins, not to be confused with kung pao chicken at your local Chinese restaurant. Now, they mix the PAO with hydrogen to stabilize it and protect it from breaking down in the heat in the air. And voila, we have pure oil. And that's method number one. Now, the more common process goes in the other direction. Instead of starting from the molecular level and building up, they start with crude oil and remove the impurities. Using a chemical catalyst plus hydrogen, heat, and high pressure, they're able to weed out the impurities like nitrogen and sulfur. Along with rearranging the molecules, they not only make the whole thing pure, but they make it more stable and long-lasting. The result is pretty much as a close match with the PAOs. Then, like any other oil, they add detergents and viscosity agents and anti-wear chemicals. The result, well, regardless of which method you use, it's a motor oil that is, with my experience, does a far better and longer-lasting job of protecting engines. And the reason it works better is because the traditional crude oil comes from its dinosaur ancestors and has all sorts of different kinds of molecules. So the molecules don't flow over each other easily, and they bump into it, and they don't spread uniformly across your engine parts. And if you want a visual image, Mobile One used to liken the molecules to like a can of rocks, which is how people used to refer to my brother's brains. Whereas synthetic oil, say, is more like a can of marbles. It flows smoothly and coats more evenly than the big rocks. So hope that helps. I think that's a pretty good description of how this oil is made, and certainly why right now, for the most part, you always want to use a synthetic oil. And in fact, even in some of the older classic cars that the shop I work at, we're putting synthetic oil in those cars as well, but we do like the high zinc, which offers a lot of protection. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name is Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.